Hey there. Are you tired of waiting for the next episode of It's Probably Not Aliens? Well, we've got some good news for you. On Nebula, our streaming service, you can get access to all our episodes a week early. That's right. You'll never have to wait again to hear Scott and I debunk the latest ancient astronaut theory or get a movie fact wrong. But that's not all. Nebula is home to dozens of content creators we know you like, so you can find all your favorites in one place. Plus, we post content on there that you won't find anywhere else. And the best part? By signing up for Nebula at nebula.tv/probablynotaliens, you're directly supporting the show and both of us. So don't wait any longer. Join Nebula today and listen to the next episode right after this one. Emergency to start.
I have never hit the record button as fast as I wanted to here. And we had a lot of technical issues that was holding us back. But Tristan told me something and it got me so excited because I had no idea. Tristan, what did you tell me before we started recording?
So I remembered wrong, unfortunately. But you had been quoted in Variety. What happened was, to kind of get the full thing, is that I was on Google. Like anybody who has a Pixel or an Android phone knows there's like the far left column where you just get like scattered algorithmically chosen news stories.
The radical left column.
Left column where you just get random news. And for me, algorithmically, it says that I want Baldur's Gate news, ChatGPT developments, and just random bullshit. But then, so I was like, you know, looking at these the other day, and I get a pop-up that says, our Netflix series is toning down Sokka, but fans don't agree with the change. Quote, we got to stop with needing faves to be unproblematic. And I was like, that sounds suspiciously close to the tweet that Scott put out earlier today on that topic. And
so I tweeted it, and then like 4 minutes later, it had like 1,000 likes. I'm just like, that is so much for me. And now it's like hundreds of thousands of people have seen it, and potentially millions of people have seen it, but hundreds of thousands of people have liked it. I don't know what happened. I think I just hit the algorithm exactly right talking about this, and I muted it like so quickly. I do that every time a tweet of mine takes off. So I had no idea that that news publications picked up on it and were like...
So the only one that I could pick up, so that headline was from Games Radar Plus, not Variety, but I think it's because Variety was the story that like did the story that you were reacting to when they mentioned that Sokka is not going to be sexist anymore. Which, yeah, as you mentioned, as like you kind of point out, that's like the entire arc of his character with the whole Kyoshi Warriors thing. It'll be a big part of season one. His entire storyline is based on him overcoming his like sort of chauvinism, right? So
yeah, sorry if you're not a fan of Avatar the Last Airbender, just ignore us for the next couple of minutes. But basically, yeah, one of the main characters, Sokka, the older brother, is intentionally sexist so that he can learn not to be. And that was sort of what my tweet was about, is like they were saying, we're going to tone down the sexism in the live action show. And I was like, that's misses the point entirely, because he's a character that teaches you not to be sexist. So
he acts sexist, and then the Kyoshi warrior kicks his ass. Like that's the whole shtick.
Yeah, it's great. It's fantastic.
And then afterwards, I think it's in the same episode or later on, he like learns how to fight from the Kyoshi warriors and shows. It's called a character arc. We don't have those in media anymore, but
characters
start off with flaws that then change over time as they become better people. That's like sort of the heroes used to go on journeys to become better people, and now they
and learn stuff and grow and all your main characters have to be unproblematic.
So according to Brad Russell, the person who wrote this article,
Bradley Russell,
we got the quote here that says, we gotta stop needing face be unproblematic, wrote, quote, one wrote on Twitter.
Didn't even use my name. Just one wrote on Twitter that this very popular thing. Thanks Brad.
Not Scott Nicewander of It's Probably Not Aliens.
Yeah, because they go on to the next paragraph. Brad quotes another tweet from actor Nicole Maines. He uses her name.
To be fair, knowing how journalists' lives...
I know I wasn't the star of a CW Supergirl show like Nicole Maines was, but I matter also in some small way.
It's probably not Aliens host Scooby-Doo
enthusiasts. Yeah, YouTuber.
There's probably two reasons. One, journalists work under insane pressure. Like he probably had half an hour to write this article.
Yeah.
And then second, trying to choose what to call you is kind of a complicated thing.
They used my words in the title of the article.
That is true. You should have definitely been named if your words end up as the headline. But also journalists fairly often do not get to choose their own headlines. That's usually the editor. So
All right.
It's not Brad's
Either
fault.
Way.
It's Brad's boss.
All right, Brad.
You know what? Don't be mean to Brad. Brad's probably fine.
Don't be mean to Brad.
He's just doing his job. It's just
Brad's doing their job. But still, that was so funny to me. I had no idea. Anyway, this has been Avatar: The Last Airbender live action news for everybody.
Yeah, there was that hyper focus. Then my hyper focus yesterday was just apparently like the whole thing that like there was a convoluted set of rumors that was implying that like Larian Studios was going to buy D&D, like the entire IP yesterday, because Tencent was going to step in and buy it. But apparently they're starting to dispel rumors of that too. I imagine it's preliminary talks or something, but that was the thing. But I actually have a real cold open story that we need to cover because it's been the topic of several episodes in a row now, which is that the city has cracked down on our subterranean mining woman, our subterranean Minecraft lady.
Okay, this is the real news. I promise. I know that this is a podcast about ancient aliens and ancient astronaut theory, and we will get to that. We will get to that.
But we've been talking about random shit to start with.
This is much needed follow up. We've been talking about the TikTok lady who has been digging a mine under her home for seemingly no reason. I gotta know what the follow up is.
Basically, it's an interesting and also kind of sweet story, which is that some people showed some, let's just say, concerns about the safety or legality of doing this, including some of her neighbors who worried, like, hey, maybe if you're digging a network of tunnels under my house, that could cause problems for me. So apparently town officials in her hometown put in a stop work order to her and demand that she immediately stop and have her mine be evaluated by a professional engineer because it might be breaking the uniform statewide building code, to say the least.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, is that apparently not only like the TikTok lady, she does intend to resume work once like the approvals and permits get put in place, but apparently also like her neighbors were sheepish about like complaining about it, and they were also like, we would love for her to get her mine back up and running because it's kind of like a cool thing that's happening on our street. So like apparently like the town is also on board with the mine. They just like are like, for legal and safety reasons, we have to like make
sure above board.
Yeah. So basically she's getting to the point where like she intends to get everything legal and above board to continue the TikTok mine.
Wild.
Yeah.
Don't you think that sort of takes away from the fun of it all, though?
The fact that it was borderline illegal, yeah, but also this probably would result in her having a much lower chance of dying, so...
Yes. I'm not saying they shouldn't have done this. I'm glad that everything's going to be above board. I'm just saying the excitement on like a caveman, like reptile brain level of like, but isn't it kind of exciting that it was illegal though?
The smartest action would have been is that if this happened, but then nobody said it and they just kind of continued. Well, it was above, like continue with it being above board and legal, but just don't say it.
Have it be above board, but don't publicly say that it's above board.
Yeah, it's like when you find out that like there was a buffet tray at the Survivor Island. Like, you know, it's just like,
right. We don't talk about it.
Yeah.
It takes away from the fun. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like Bear Grylls having like experts around to like help him out. And he's like, but while he's pretending to be, he's like, all right, once we're done shooting for the night, we're going to go to the hotel, right?
Yeah, that makes some noise bit is like the most true one, where it's like Bear Grylls, no, like he was like right by water. He just wanted to drink the pee.
He wanted to drink drink his own pee.
That's just
his thing. He's a little freak. I love him.
Speaking of little freaks, welcome to It's Probably Not Aliens, a podcast about ancient astronaut theory, ancient aliens, pseudo history, pseudo archaeology, pseudoscience, all of the crankery with a sci-fi bent is our shtick.
You know what? This is also going to be some much needed follow-up that I will check on really quickly. And maybe you know the answer to this. Did we ever come to a conclusion of what our listeners are called? Either Cosmic Comrades or Space Potatoes.
Narrowly won, but yeah.
Welcome to our little freaks, the Space Potatoes, who listen to this show. My name is Scott Nicewander. I'm the host of the show that knows nothing except for apparently very basic arcs in Avatar The Last Airbender. Mm-hmm. And why they're important. The end. That's what I do on this show.
Mm-hmm. I am the other side of this duo. I also wrote like a random piece of lore mythology on our Twitter feed last week. But I am the deity of knowledge and sadness. While you are the small-headed, empty-minded.
Thank you.
Deity of happiness, and I am the one burdened with wisdom and sadness.
Everyone was like, we didn't talk about that before you posted it. You just post. I don't even know what inspired that, but
probably
we basically have our own canon creation myth now.
I'll show you what inspired it. It's on my desk right now. This, the users won't be able to see this, nor can we talk about it legally, probably because of the United States. But this is, it is a cannabis vaporizer.
It's a thing that alters your mind, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's a cannabis vaporizer, and that kind of inspired it. But yeah, I'm Tristan Johnson. Gotcha. I'm the one who has spent his life going after cranks for a living. And
we thank you for it.
Well, I am very much the epitome of thanks. I hate it.
And nowhere is that more clear as we continue our series of ancient aliens and the Third Reich.
Oh boy. So
what are we talking about today? Okay. What are we actually talking? This is the actual podcast now. Thank you for indulging us.
Yes, thank you for our Avatar The Last Airbender / TikTok mine discourse. Mm-hmm. Okay, so today we are talking about nukes. So not for the first time on this podcast.
No, I was going to say we've done this before.
But as I'm delving through the ancient aliens Nazi episode, there was one little interaction, 5 minutes maybe of the episode, where they're sort of like the whole episode's plot is trying to build this claim that the Nazis had extraterrestrial knowledge either through a crashed UFO that crashed in somewhere around Freiburg, which is going to be an episode in our future, I imagine. But another one was that they did all the Nazi archaeology. They went all over the Middle East and to India looking for those places that we talked about.
I forgot to do the claim sound. Here, let's do that. And then where did I put it? It's right here.
Millions of people around the world believe that Germany made early breakthroughs in atomic energy and atomic power because either they had their hands on alien technology or they found secrets placed in places like Sodom and Gomorrah or Mohenjo-Daro, which might be familiar terms to real old hat potatoes.
Yeah, we've done episodes about both Sodom and Gomorrah and Mohenjo-Daro.
Yeah. So then is the question is, did Hitler and the Nazis uncover ancient atomic secrets, and how close did they come to developing this ultimate doomsday weapon? But first of all, that also the Nazis gave up on their atomic weapons program. Was it because of completely logical reasons that I might get to later in this episode?
Or
was it because they actually found more powerful super weapons?
Oh, God. Whoa.
So that's what
the soundboard's back up and running. I can't use it.
Yeah. So that's what we're investigating today. Did the Nazis learn atomic power through either looking at old nuke sites that aliens did in in India or in the Middle East, or did they develop it because they were reverse engineering nuclear technology from a UFO that crashed in Freiburg? Those are the only two answers.
That's it. And we're going to investigate both of those and presumably nothing else.
Yep. So Let's start with the first thing that, the idea that the Nazis did atomic, that they had early atomic breakthroughs, and that this was due to assistance from alien technology. That's the first theory. The second thing that they're positing is that they found this while going to places like India and the Middle East, because Ancient Aliens has made the claim that ancient civilizations had access to nuclear technology, which they then harnessed. But, you know, there's no evidence of that, which, you know, is a little bit slow. But if you want to figure out those claims, like about Mohenjo-Daro and Sodom and Gomorrah being the sites of nuclear blasts, I'll point you to episodes 58 for Sodom and Gomorrah and 44 for Mohenjo-Daro, which I'm realizing was almost 100 episodes ago. So,
Jesus.
If I said to Scott at the beginning of this episode, and this is probably going to have to be a way that we run our episodes in the future, is that we'll kind of brush over some of the claims and debunkings because we've already debunked them in other episodes. But at least when we do that, I'll try to point you to where to listen and give you a brief rundown in case you don't want to listen to another 2 hours of content. But basically,
I cannot believe we've been doing this show for so long.
Yeah, almost 3 years. Actually, in March, it'll be 3 years since we started.
Since we started recording. Yeah. Absolutely wild.
Yeah. So back to Nazis.
Great. Love it.
But the general vibe of these two things is that Ancient Aliens has claimed that these places were the sites of nuclear explosions, as written in like sort of the mythology of the two events. Sodom and Gomorrah, we kind of broke down, might have been the site of something akin to a meteor strike. And that is like, there's like a kind of growing, interesting line of evidence that there might have been a meteor strike around the Sodom and Gomorrah region that might have been the inspiration of the Sodom and Gomorrah story of the Bible.
Oh, that's interesting.
And the Mohenjo-Daro thing is just a regular city that probably got attacked by raiders.
Alien raiders?
Probably other like nomadic people who raided the town.
Okay. Sure.
But the general vibe of that is that because in Hindu mythology, they have these things called Brahma weapons, because we talked about Hinduism, an extremely metal religion. Everything is big and epic and explosions and billions of years. And like, you know,
yeah,
it's as if like Dragon Force made a religion.
That's a good way to put it.
So,
I think so.
So in Hinduism, there are these things called Brahma weapons, which are like mythological, like mythical weapons, like Excalibur, but like they're like a bow that when it shoots arrows can destroy entire cities and make them unlivable for centuries. And Ancient Aliens was like, oh, that's a nuke. And it's like,
yeah.
No, and we got into both of those in those two episodes. So that's sort of the thing we're going for with that.
Yeah.
And then the idea that Hitler then abandoned the atomic weapons program because they actually had better things, like the sort of UFO that Victor Schauberger was developing that we talked about last week, or other sort of things in their Wunderwaffen program that we talked about, where the Nazis were secretly developing all sorts of super weapons that just, you know, were just about to hit the market or whatever, and then the war ended. And like, this is sort of like an ongoing thing in like our, you know, crank history of the Nazis, and has like some roots in sort of weird esoteric shit that the Nazis got into, and also a sort of like engineering program developed during the end of the war that was sort of an act of desperation to try and find anything that could stop the Soviet Union from basically just devouring their entire empire. Because the Russians were just like they were just like, you know, they're like, no matter how many people we kill, the Russians just keep having more people. We cannot stop them.
How do they do it?
Yeah. And so like that sort of came out. And also, just like trying to figure out, how do we use all of these leftover Navy parts, because we can't have a Navy anymore because we've lost the battle at sea and that kind of stuff. So that's like,
they were desperate.
Yeah, they were desperate. And so they were like, let's find anything that can work. But like those two things have kind of turned into a mythology that the Nazis had secret super weapons that they were working on. And obviously that is true, because the Germans won World War II with all of those super weapons. And
they did it. And now look at us.
Mm-hmm.
We're all speaking German.
Yep. Nyswander.
Oh, no.
Extremely German name.
Yeah, that's true.
Scott.
I'm pretty sure Scott is Scottish, if I had to guess.
Yes. Anyway, let's look into these actual claims. That's what we're going to
get. Let's do it.
So first, let's start with the historical accuracy of their claims about Nazi scientific capabilities. So first of all, we do have to give some concessions, because one, yes, Nazi Germany did indeed do research related to developing nuclear weapons. This is a verified fact.
Okay.
They had roped in key figures like Werner Heisenberg, the person of the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Ah.
And had other had other people, like other top like German nuclear physicists working on this program. But they had a lot of changes, or they had a lot of challenges to get it going because, I'll get into it in detail later. But they basically ran into a lot of issues, and we did find near the end of the war through Allied intelligence, they did develop an atom weapons program that began in 1939, but they never actually came close to developing a functional nuclear bomb. They the program was abandoned very early on and never really amounted to anything, but it did exist. That's the main thing. And that's held in contrast to the program that did successfully develop a nuclear bomb, which was the Manhattan Project, which happened in the United States, which was a collaborative effort between the United States, the UK, and Canada, and involved tons of nuclear researchers, and a key part of this whole process, access to a huge resource network that included things like getting the absolutely absurd amounts of uranium that you need to purify and refine to turn into plutonium in order to make a successful nuclear bomb.
It's an important ingredient.
That's why you ever wonder why, when people are talking about like countries developing nuclear bombs, they're always talking about like centrifuges and stuff like that. It's because that's the technology you need for refining uranium into something that is
like step zero.
Yeah, you need to turn the rocks into spicy enough rocks that you can then use them for a fission explosion or a fusion explosion. Get into that in a second. But that is sort of like when you find out that they're like developing centrifuges, it's like, oh, you're not just trying to build a nuclear power plant. You're trying to build a bomb. Like you might the big one you might remember, if you're as sad and masochistic as I am, and you follow the news to the extent I do. But if you remember that Iran,
I didn't even know I was in the news.
Yeah, you were there.
Yeah.
But like Iran, a number of years ago, was having issues with their centrifuges breaking down. And it turned out that it was like a Israeli virus that was being installed on there, like where the centrifuges were like they installed a virus that was making the centrifuges work improperly and was making them like break down faster in order to slow down Iran's nuclear weapons development program. And that's sort of part of that. Yeah.
Cyber warfare.
That is like very literal cyber warfare.
Yeah.
But they didn't abandon, like the thing is that the evidence shows, especially like through people who would be very interested in what the Germans were doing in their nuclear weapons program, i.e. like Allied spies in Germany during the war, show that they abandoned it they didn't abandon it because they had better things. They stopped it because they realized that they were being outpaced and they were out-resourced by the Allied powers, and Germany sort of, like, if you think about one of the things about World War II is you have to kind of think of it like Germany had no empire, right? They had no, Britain had India, it had like, you know, the Middle East, it had like vast like colonies across the world. The United States had had a vast like, you know, industrial base because America is like the third largest country on Earth and has tons of natural resources. Russia, the biggest country, or Soviet Union, the biggest country on Earth, and had access to almost huge reserves of oil and natural gas. Germany, with its allies being Italy and Japan, had like no access to gasoline and they developed the whole idea of making synthetic rubber because they couldn't get access to actual rubber.
Oh yeah.
So if you think about it, like a lot of what Germany was trying to do in the war, and it informed their strategy, is that they needed to win fast and early because they did not have the sort of depths of personnel and resources in order to fight a long protracted war. So as the war kept going,
they didn't have that supply chain.
Yeah. And as I kind of implied with the Manhattan Project, is that to make a nuclear bomb, you need an astonishing amount of resources to make happen.
Italy didn't have spicy rocks. They had spicy meatballs.
Oh,
that's my joke of the episode.
There you go.
Enjoy. You're welcome.
Everyone have that fun. Like, if you think about it, uranium is like about as rare as silver.
Uh-huh.
And then you think about it, you have to...
Sorry, I'm going to edit that earlier. Okay. I wasn't fast enough on it. Sorry, you go for it.
That's fine. But uranium is about as rare as silver and has to be like highly refined in order to function, right? So it's a whole thing. And so the fact is like they just didn't have they didn't have the resources, and we'll learn later, they also didn't have the people to develop this program and develop the science this fast. And the Manhattan Project was kind of just the fact that like the United States was able to wield huge amounts of resources through them and their like allies to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Sometimes I feel like I look at my own notes and I'm like, I'm stating the obvious here, but like the claim that like Nazis had access to alien technology is not full of any credible actual evidence.
I'm looking at the headline for your notes, and it just says no evidence for alien technology in World War II.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, it was that easy.
Yeah. So this is kind of what I'm really trying to say is that the idea that Nazis had like secret high tech weapons and like alien technology is a narrative that started emerging after World War II. That there's like these stories that like the Nazis were trying to develop advanced aircraft or spacecraft, and that these survived the war through secret underground bases that they had in Antarctica or South America. Cause there's several lines of Nazi conspiracy theories that like they had a secret base in Antarctica because they had one expedition that kind of went there. And also that like they had a secret thing going on in Argentina because Argentina was kind of friendly to the Nazis, and that a lot of Nazis who escaped justice from the Nuremberg trials found themselves in Argentina, and that's where they kind of hid out for the rest of their lives. So there was a theory for a long time that because the Soviets burned Hitler's remains as soon as they found his body after he committed suicide, so there's no corpse. We have no burial site for Hitler. That was intentional. The Soviets did that very intentionally, but right. That has led to a conspiracy that Hitler survived the war and was hiding in Argentina because so many other high-ranking Nazis were also able to escape and go to Argentina.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
Yeah, so like that kind of builds into that, and you know that they developed anti-gravity, which we know we talked about last week with Victor Freiburg, or Victor
Schauberger.
But we're also going to get into in a future episode, probably sooner rather than later, Die Glocke or the Bell, which is another sort of claim that they had anti-gravity technology from extraterrestrial sources.
I'm excited. We're building this one up. I'm excited for it because this is like the big thing that I've heard of before. So I'm excited for when we do that episode.
Yeah. And this is not based on nothing, because as we said, they had some weird esoteric research they got into. They did have like the Wunderwaffen program near the end of the war, but also that it's not an entirely baseless claim too, because Nazi Germany actually did show an interest in developing flying saucer shaped vehicles. A lot of countries did. I think now this part I could very well be wrong, but I think it's the kind of there was this period in aviation technology where they started developing these like they were thinking about making these flying saucers, and the kind of two technologies that were born out of that work turned into what would later be jet engines, which was like a sort of development of World War II, and then later on helicopter, because they were basically trying to figure out how to make either a way of propelling
like
through the air using
vertically
turbines rather than like propellers.
Oh, I see.
But then also vertical takeoff and landing, which was another dream, and that the helicopter sort of came out of that research. So like there is like even like I think the US made some like weird flying saucer shaped experimental vehicles, but they didn't really work because they were trying to figure out how to like, if we take jet engine and turn it vertical, does that work? And then they're like, oh no, it doesn't. What if we take propeller, or what if we make propeller, put it on top and make it go very fast, and we have helicopter?
That works.
Yeah. So that's sort of like the beginning of that.
Do you know how if you have like a fan, like a table fan or like a floor, like a fan,
that one right there,
and you it's spinning and you speak into it, it like makes your voice sound sort of funny and robotic.
We've all been 6 years old. Yes.
Yes. Does that? I know helicopters are loud, so you wouldn't be able to hear yourself. But if I shouted into a helicopter propeller, what would my voice sound like, do you think?
My guess is that if you got close enough to do something like that, it would sound much like Scott being chopped up into 10 million pieces.
Gotcha. All right. So wouldn't recommend.
Would not recommend. No.
Okay.
Generally, general rule of thumb is that if helicopter blades are moving, you should not be close to the helicopter. General rule of thumb.
Do not fight Harrison Ford around them. You will get shredded up if there are propeller blades moving around, whether helicopter or plane. It doesn't matter.
Oh, yeah, because and Nazis again.
That's a Nazi thing.
But kind of through that, you can sort of see here where this thing comes from, where all the pieces are, because you do, like, as I kind of mentioned, like, you have this war that was, like, apocalyptic in nature, like, defining for our century. Like, we are, in many ways, we are still living in a world defined by the post-World War II moment.
Mm-hmm.
The most, like, if you were to kind of like look at the grand array of history and look at our moment in history right now, like maybe like 300 years from now, we would still kind of be under the post-World War II reality moment.
I mean, until World War III.
Until World War III, which, you know, also people were talking more seriously about this week, which is fun.
Mm.
Yeah, there's this whole thing where it's like, man, America seems to want to have Civil War II and World War III in the same week. But like the Nazis did have a lot of very weird ideas that we'll learn later were because they were bad at science and history.
What?
But also, like, they had a lot of issues with, or like they also, you know, have this sort of like mystique over our civilization, and they definitely were trying to like do these like moonshot projects. They just never worked. And you could kind of see like,
it wasn't because they were like, you know, playing 3D chess and just like unraveling physics at the seams. It's just because they were desperate and just sort of grasping at any straw.
And they had a very stupid idea of how science works.
Yeah.
The other thing too, is that like, there's been a consistent post-World War II interest group that is very interested in trying to rehabilitate the Nazi regime and try to make it so that, you know, the horrors that they committed on humanity don't get as much attention, and that to imply that they were more successful at things than they actually were.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And then, yeah, there's this idea that like Nazis had like these super weapons that was, again, pushed in a lot of circles that were trying to promote anti-Semitic conspiracy theories or esoteric Nazi ideology, which I feel like I need to make like a step back video just about esoteric Nazi ideology and how a lot of Nazi ideology just got sanitized and moved into like sort of new agey directions. But the thing is that it's all based on some real stuff, because the regime did have a fascination with the supernatural and the occult. They had this belief in the racial superiority of Aryans, which led them on this fruitless search to find ancient artifacts and relics related to like to prove their racial ideology true. They did have a nuclear weapons program that also contributed to this. For example, they did have a group called the Angerbe, which was a sort of Nazi archaeology program that tried to do expeditions and research to prove that there was an Aryan race and that they were, you know, they were racially superior, but it was all based on pseudoscientific stuff and lacked any actual evidence that it worked.
Right. They had a conclusion based on nothing, and they were trying to justify it by being like, all right, we this is what we believe. Now go find evidence that proves what we believe is true before we, like, yeah, it's nonsense.
Yeah, it's sort of like how this is sort of like a similar kind of thing, which is that like there was this movement, and it didn't last super long time, but in the Soviet Union there was this thought that like Darwinian evolution, right, that was sort of framed as all species being in competition with each other, which is not really an accurate way to talk about it, but it was a way that people talked about at the time, sounded too capitalist, and so they bought into an alternative method of evolution called Lamarckian evolution, which didn't actually work and ignored how DNA works. But it was like a non-capitalist way to describe how animals and plants change over time. So they kind of rolled with it a lot longer than they should have. Other thing too, that we'll need to get into is that part of the conspiracy is also that like these super weapons were then snatched up by America after the war and brought to like Area 51 under Project Operation Paperclip, which was a real thing that happened that we'll talk about a little bit later too. So like, and then like, you know, these stories started going around in like fringe circles, and eventually they would get like, they would leave Nazi circles and they would enter into esoteric or like occult circles, or they would go to like New Age circles, or they would get further diluted into just the general UFO culture. And before you know it, like weird esoteric Nazi shit through like three levels of intermediaries is ending up becoming mainstream to the point where it's being promoted as a potentially real thing on shows like Ancient Aliens on the History Channel, which presumably has non-Nazis working there and has, you know, there are theoretically like, you know, Jewish people who work at History Channel or Jewish people who enjoy the History Channel who are then being subjected to to stuff that comes from an ideology that was wholly focused on their eradication. And that's terrifying.
And I we've talked about this before, but I think the defense of Ancient Aliens and even the History Channel is like, hey, we're not saying this stuff happened. We're just asking questions.
Yeah.
We're just saying, who knows? Maybe. That's an interesting thought. I don't know. But it's when you're presented on the History Channel, what you're presumably learning is real history,
mm-hmm.
And you're not. you're just not with this show.
Yeah, and the way that they frame it is definitely like plausible deniability so that they can avoid these kinds of criticisms. But the thing is that, like, yeah, Nazi UFOs emerged in the 60s by authors who linked UFOs to Nazi Germany. You have books like Reich of the Black Sun and Pentagon Aliens that sort of push these stories. Then like shows like In Search of Aliens picked it up. And then it got, as many conspiracies do, got kind of roped into other meta conspiracies like the Illuminati and the UFO cover-ups. And it just sort of entered into the general milieu of people who don't have much scruples or don't have much, don't critically think about the things that they believe before they espouse their belief in them. And that's kind of where things are. But I want to kind of, so like, that's like the main thing. Like it's just, this is the messy sort of weird link between fascism in the far right and UFO circles that we're always sort of playing with and having to dance with, because we have to mention fascists so much on this podcast. That's supposed to be like a fun thing. And since we're going through this episode, we're like confronting it head on. And so that I kind of wanted to get to.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, I feel like we've hit on a lot of the claims, a lot of the pseudo history specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if we could learn maybe some like real history.
Of course. But I do have to do one quick thing first. And that is we have to product and we have to service.
Yep. Okay. We can do that.
All right.
Yeah, we can do that really quickly. Let's do it.
Let's talk about the real Nazi atomic weapons program and the Manhattan Project. So
I would love to. You know, there was a movie about this recently.
There was. I haven't seen it yet. I only saw the Barbie in the Barbenheimer. But
me too.
Because it's what's his face? It's
Chris Nolan.
Yeah, it's Christopher Nolan. And like Christopher Nolan, it's like one of those. I'm still a little bit mad about how he tried to make everybody go to the movies to see his movie during COVID.
During a pandemic. Yeah.
So
that's not great when he did that part of it.
I also don't really like that he made an entire Batman movie where the villain is Occupy Wall Street.
Yeah, it's like, we're not a movie podcast. We say this a lot, but like, wow, Bane was like, boy, the wealthy people are ruining the whole city. And then you're like, yeah, actually Bane has a point. And then to make you not think that, he was like, and then Bane was like, and also I have an actual nuke that I'm going to blow up Gotham with. And it's like, well, hold on now. Maybe that's not what we want.
To go full circle, like, to the beginning of the podcast, it's the same thing as the equalists from Korra, the Legend of Korra, where they're like, oh, these people have like a real point that there's like these random people who have superpowers and they get all of these benefits in society and everyone else kind of gets fucked over. And then they're like, oh, but also we're evil. Like, we're going to, I don't remember what their plan was. Their plan was to just like kill a bunch of people or something. And it was like, oh no.
We gotta stop having white dudes write stories about inequality.
Yeah.
I don't think we're good at it.
We're not. I did like that it thematically like took like the thing that Aang used to end Avatar and used it as like the sort of problem at the beginning of Korra. Like, I thought that was clever thematic because he used that same ability to take the power away from the Fire Lord. I thought that was clever. But yeah, the whole, like, there's these situations where they want to make complex villains, and the complex villains are right, and then they get themselves into a corner where they're like, oh shit, the villain is right and the hero is wrong. So then they just do like a 180 and be like, and also I'm a cartoon supervillain. It's
Killmonger, the villain's gonna kill everybody.
What's his name? Is it Killmonger
in Black Panther?
Yeah. And like and like this guy, and like I think Bane Flag Smasher or whatever.
From what?
From the Disney Captain America thing. You saw it, I didn't.
From Falcon and Winter Soldier. Yeah.
Yeah, so like that's like the sort of thing. But the German atomic weapons program.
Anyway, we're not a movie podcast.
The German atomic weapons research program, which was called the Uranverein or the Uranium Club, actually began shortly after the discovery of nuclear fission by Otto Hahn and Fritz Strassmann, which started in 1938, a year before the war started. So the nuclear fission we'll get into later, but that was a discovery of like, holy shit, there's like this source of huge amounts of power. I bet we could turn it into a weapon.
I was going to ask this at the beginning of the episode. I was like, because you were talking about how everyone was sort of racing to build a nuclear bomb. I was like, how did everyone at the same time like think of this?
The scientific discovery came out that if you shoot a neutron at certain types of materials, a chain reaction happens where a bunch of energy comes out and you're like, oh shit, okay. That
first things first, how can we kill people with this?
Well, they were like energy and bomb. How do we get both of those?
Yeah, yeah.
This had people like Werner Heisenberg of like Breaking Bad fame. Who was a Nobel laureate, so like, you know, big deal. And they did try to develop like the first like nuclear reactors and nuclear weapons. But it had the issue of they had lack of resources, as I mentioned. They had issues with internal competition where lots of different scientists were trying to do crazy things and they were just one of them. And also just the fact that as the war, like, you know, as you're trying to decide what materials you're going to put into different parts of the war, the idea that like, do we put our materials, like if we have like 10,000 tons of steel, do we use that steel to help develop a new containment chamber for this fission reactor that might in like 5 years produce a weapon? Or do we turn that steel into more guns and bullets for the soldiers that are fighting right now?
Right. So
those kinds of priorities started to hinder the program's ability to get the stuff it needed to really advance the science.
I see. Sort of short-term thinking on their part.
So they were interested in making the bomb, but by 1942, the program had shifted from developing a weapon to building a reactor that could sustain nuclear fission, because a bunch of presentations to high-ranking Nazi military commanders made it clear that they didn't have a plan for developing a real bomb. The program...
Just a theoretical bomb.
For example, they weren't able to separate the isotopes necessary to create an atom bomb. They weren't able to like refine enough uranium to get the bomb material they needed. They were never able to get a successful chain reaction, which is what you need for fission. And also
they're like, oh, we're just making a big mess with these spicy meatballs from Italy. That's all we have.
And you can't make nuclear bombs out of meatballs no matter how hard you try.
And they tried.
You also need a lot of deuterium or heavy water to do nuclear bomb or nuclear research with, which is also tough to get. And they were not able to get it. So in July of 1942, they scrapped it and they moved the research, and they split it into 9 different institutions around the country. Some research in atomic energy did continue, but it was not supported by the government, and none of them came close to actually supporting a actual weapon. After the war, some of the uranium that the Nazis had was added to the United States' own nuclear efforts, and some of the cubes used in their experiments, it did end up in the hands of either private collectors or research institutions. So like, not only do we like know that these things were abandoned, but like we found like the exact stuff, and some people still have like, you know, as artifacts, the actual stuff that was used, but also some of it wound up in the US and to their nuclear weapons program. Mm-hmm. So that's like the main thing. But the other big thing is that German, like we're kind of like talking as if like the Germans had like some sort of inspiration, like alien or just like being like really enlightened by getting into all these esoteric things. But the main reason why a lot of this like random weird shit got greenlit is because Germany had a lot of scientific and technical advancements that were hampered by the fact that they were so married to pseudo history and pseudoscience, married to their idea of race. So this meant that like key scientists and like, you know, entire branches of physics were ignored because they thought that they were like, you know, Jewish science or something like that. And so they lacked the like theoretical scientific backing to even approach like, you know, new frontiers in theoretical physics. And like, you know, like again, like they had the SS's Ankaube, which was instead of trying to discover things about archaeology, was trying to just simply prove the superiority of the Aryan race. And they did so by
a futile effort.
And at the
I could say so.
Yeah. And at the same time, though, like this is kind of like emblematic of like how science worked in Nazi Germany, which is that they had a preconceived conclusion that they had to go out and then find the answer that they wanted.
Right.
But then at the same time, they would then report as if they had found it, producing like basically fabricated documents and bad, like, you know, like bad scientific research and all that kind of stuff to prove their preconceived conclusion, which leads to poisoning the sort of scientific process and makes it that you can't really develop more off of that.
I was going to say, it seems like it's the exact opposite of the scientific method.
Yeah.
You don't really start with a conclusion and find evidence for it.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, too, is that the Nazis had a lot of really harsh, to say the least, they had a lot of harsh racial policies that were designed to at first isolate and then exterminate large parts of their own population, including the Jewish population, but also people with disabilities, Romani people, communists, homosexuals, Jehovah's Witnesses, like to the point where, like, you know, 20 million people died in the Holocaust, and like 6 million of them were like represented, like virtually like a humongous percentage of the Jewish population of Eastern Europe. And all of this was based on this like completely false concept of like racial hygiene and racial, like the Nazis had this sort of concept that all races were in perpetual, they were like in perpetual competition with each other. And that, like, you know, there's like, you know, races would defeat
another
other races.
Capitalist approach.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, this will be a spicy, but fascism at its core is basically hyper-capitalism. It's like, if you take the concept of capitalism and apply it to countries and people.
Spicy. Yeah. I wish I had like a hot take button, but sound effect, but I don't think I do. I think I have this.
Ooh.
Whoa. Hot take.
Yeah. And it led to them doing stuff like, say, when they're developing particle physics to make nuclear weapons, taking ideological stances that they say that things like quantum mechanics, i.e. the physics of particles and stuff at the atomic level, were dismissed as being Jewish physics.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
What is wrong with them?
A lot is the answer.
So much.
Yeah, and like, again, this like attempt to build a propaganda campaign diverted resources away from real archaeology and real science. And what would happen is that a lot of these crank ideas that they then bought into would then, after the war, be rebranded as the truths that mainstream archaeologists don't want you to know.
Oh my god, where have I heard that before?
Yeah, like, this is like the made up shit that they brought up was the kind of stuff that would then get watered down into this, like, you know, the stuff that you see on Ancient Aliens, right?
Yep.
Because they believe, like, one example would be world ice theory, which was this idea, this cosmological concept by this guy named Hans Hobbiger, who was like this Austrian engineer who thought that ice was the basic substance of all cosmic processes, and that ice moons, ice planets, and global ether had determined the entire development of the universe.
This is so, I've never heard of this before.
We're getting
wild.
Into like deep esoteric Nazi shit. But like, thing is that Hauberger's ideas came through a vision he had in 1894.
Ah, the true source of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of these things became then, after the war, repackaged, kind of like with their nuclear weapons program and UFO stuff, as hidden truths that mainstream archaeologists, because they weren't, like, they were, like, they got into like weird shit because they had a warped and like bad concept of history and science and everything. And then after the war, their ideas sort of trickle out and people think of it as like secret hidden knowledge that they don't want you to know about. And then when, you know, you sanitize it just enough so that the Nazi label gets taken off of it, and all of a sudden you have Ancient Aliens at a certain point.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you hear a lot of this stuff and it's phrased as knowledge they don't want you to know about, and then you start asking, who's they? Who's the they in that question?
Yeah.
And then suddenly, you get to some Nazi ideology.
Yeah. As soon as you have a they, like, this is my whole like conspiracy theory stance, is like, as soon as you have a they, you're like, that's like you're wading into anti-Semitism already at that point. Because like, the first conspiracy theory really was the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which was this sort of anti-Semitic text from the late 19th century. But yeah, the other thing too is that this kind of, like, you know, bad take and like the mainstream archaeologists dismiss this as important is now also a leading thing in the sort of attack on the right against professional scholarship, specialization, and expertise, and the promotion of pseudoscience over established consensus, which you see in like climate change denial and like the sort of attack on woke universities and like the sort of the theory of cultural Marxism. It all kind of has its roots from this this like line of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And keep in mind that the Nazi government was totalitarian to the extreme. They tried to control what people learned, what people thought. So like, they took a extreme interest in making sure that these bad ideas were then taught in all of the schools to all the people, and that like the experts were saying all these things, which stifled it. For example, I'll just kind of get into this. Their racial policies led to a huge emigration or the murder of many Jewish scientists, or the dismissing of their ideas, and
kind of backfired on them in some regards there.
And before World War II, Germany had like a significant Jewish population and a significant representation representation in the sciences because of like a sort of like a cultural emphasis on education, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And because, you know, when you are barred from a lot of different trades, like in historically in Europe, Jews were barred from many trades that were lucrative and made money. And so they ended up having to enter into other professions, and they happened to be professions that, you know, required high education. So like a lot of European Jewish culture would have this emphasis on like, you know, getting a good education, which resulted in a lot of highly educated Jewish people who contributed to science and such.
Yeah.
For example, here's just like a brief list of the people who left Germany.
Oh my God.
Because of
brief list.
A brief list of Jewish scientists who had to leave Germany because of their growing attacks on Jewish people.
All right, get into it.
Fritz Haber, the Nobel Prize in chemistry winner who invented the Haber-Bosch process, which refines air into usable, or the nitrogen in the air into ammonia, which is basically the core behind all of fertilizer.
Yep.
Interesting. That's also because he was a key person in the development of the chemical weapons program for Germany in the First World War. Lise Meitner, a physicist who played a major role in the discovery of nuclear fission, had to leave Germany in 1938.
Oh, kind of an important person you'd want to have.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah, someone you'd want around. Otto Meyerhoff, who was a physicist and biochemist who got the Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine in 1922, left Germany. Max Born, the physicist and mathematician who was instrumental in developing quantum mechanics, led in 1933.
Oh my God.
Erwin Schrödinger of Schrödinger's cat, the physicist who also developed a number of quantum theory, had to leave Germany in 1933. Another one I didn't even mention here was Sigmund Freud. Sigmund Freud was a Jewish German who had to leave.
Left.
Yeah. Hans Krebs, who identified citric acid, the citric acid cycle, you know, part of like, you know, like biology and such.
Yeah, it makes good sour candies. Thank you. I love Sour Patch Kids.
Exactly. The biochemist who purified penicillin, Ernst Schein, had to leave Germany in 1933.
That's a massive one.
Yeah, you think that during a war, making penicillin, big deal.
Huge help.
Yeah. Mats Prutz, the biologist who was awarded the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 1962. Later, had to leave Austria in 1936 because of this. Another one, although he wasn't Jewish, his wife was Jewish, was Enrico Fermi of Fermi Paradox? Of our first episode of the show, where we mentioned a conversation they were having while working on the Manhattan Project.
Oh my God.
As like a showing like all of these people who fled Germany because they were Jewish physicists, who then went to America and developed America's nuclear bomb. Hans Bethe.
This is what I meant when I said earlier that it kind of backfired on Germany a
for
little
real. Bit. Hans Bethe, the physicist who would later win a Nobel Prize in Physics, left Germany in 1933. John von Neumann, the mathematician who also contributed to a wide range of fields in mathematics, had to leave.
I've heard that name before, yeah.
Leo Szilard, who's a physicist and the inventor who conceived the nuclear chain reaction, left Germany in 1933.
Jesus.
James Frank, a physicist who got the Nobel Prize in 1925. Edward Teller, who was a Hungarian physicist who was known as the, quote, father of the hydrogen bomb, had to leave in 1926. Rudolf Pieris, a German nuclear physicist who was involved in Britain's atomic bomb program, had to leave Germany in 1933. And the last one, the biggest one, the person who wrote the letter to FDR warning of the German nuclear weapons program, Albert Einstein.
There he is.
Jewish physicist known for the theory of relativity, left Germany for the United States in 1933 after Hitler came to power.
So kind of a lot of important, notable scientific and mathematical minds.
Yeah, just a few, eh?
Just a few.
It's interesting how of all the scientists that developed like super technologies that Ancient Aliens talks about, like with Nikola Tesla and like, you know, all these people, that Einstein never gets added to that. I wonder what it is about Einstein that they don't want to attribute any sort of super technology developments to. I don't know.
Who knows? Who can say?
So this led to what I think I most euphemistically said, a decline in the quality and integrity of scientific research in Nazi Germany.
Yeah, you don't, to put it lightly.
Yeah. In contrast, the Manhattan Project was colossal, was kept top secret, and was in development in the United States for many years, was a international collaboration with the UK and Canada, and was an all-out effort using huge amounts of resources to develop the first nuclear bomb. The Manhattan Project succeeded, probably with the help of all those Jewish physicists that they took. They had their first controlled self-sustaining nuclear reaction in December 2nd, 1942, at the direction of Nobel Prize winning physicist Enrico Fermi, who had to leave Germany for some reason.
Yep. We'll never know.
Yeah. At its peak, the Manhattan Project had employed 130,000 people, had pilot plants, laboratories, and manufacturing facilities across the United States, which is also very far away from Europe. So they didn't have to deal with any, like, you know, war stuff, and had some of the most brilliant minds at the time, like people like J. Robert Oppenheimer, who is, you know, the father of the atomic bomb, but also people like Enrico Fermi or Richard Feynman or Edward Teller.
Yeah.
And just like was this like breaking molds constantly, not only in science, but also in engineering and industry, created an entire new form of weaponry in like an amazingly short period. It was one of the most like scientific, it was one of the most like intense scientific, like focus of scientific development in human history.
Yeah.
And then it was, of course, ultimately used to make the Fat Man and the Little Boy, which were dropped on Japan in August of 1945. Arguably,
that part's not so great. Yeah.
Arguably, you could say, though, they could say like the reason they did it is because they were so invested in this program. And then when they by the time it was actually bearing fruit, they were like, oh shit, the war's almost over and Japan keeps trying to surrender to us, but we got to use this thing because if we show it off, then the Soviets will be more scared at these conferences we keep going to.
Yeah. I wish that there was a different outcome for like a very rigorous, condensed time of scientific study and great minds coming together. Mm-hmm. Like, I wish there was a more like humanitarian sort of outcome to that, than other than just big bomb.
You can say though, that this is also the work that needed to be done to develop, like nuclear power, which
sure,
is probably going to be one of our saviors for.
But that wasn't really
change.
The focus of
no,
it. Was
the
it?
Moon program was also to develop ICBMs, but we still got to go to the moon. So, you know, you have to take the good with the bad, I guess.
How can we convince people that we can make a cool big weapon by stopping climate change?
That is true. We'll make a solar panel that can like shoot lasers or something, right?
Yeah. How can we spin it to be like, all right, we gotta fight climate change, not because it'll save the world. That's just like a byproduct of it. But at the end of it, we're gonna have a really cool weapon we can use on people.
Yeah.
Think about that.
There's something like pseudo conspiratorial about this one take, but there's also like a form of nuclear power that's used by suspending thorium in a sort of liquid salt of tetrafluoride that would result in a whole new source of nuclear fissile material that's not uranium and is very common to the point where you can harvest it from seawater. But because it was not able to be refined into something that could be a bomb, it was not really invested in. And so now it's like very slowly starting to be come online right now. Like China's investing in a lot, but like could result in nuclear power plants that are literally impossible to melt down. And you could just like bury them and like leave them for like 15 years to just like generate power because they have a few moving parts. That I also know that there's some people have some real, like people who know more than I do have some real question marks. But yeah, they were able to harness the fact that fission is where you take an atomic nucleus, you know, you take this like atom that's made up of all of like the protons and neutrons, right? You shoot an electron or a neutron at it and it explodes. And that sort of beta force or that like that all those forces keeping those things together blows apart and you get tons of energy, but also creates other particles that then hit other atoms that then break those. And so like the plutonium
creating
or the,
a chain reaction.
Exactly. The plutonium or uranium that you is special because like they're very breakable atoms basically for that kind of thing. That's sort of the principle of nuclear fission that they were able to figure out. Other thing too to mention is that the Nazis did develop a whole bunch of scientific stuff. We know because the Cold War happened right afterwards and everyone tried to gobble up Nazi scientists like they were fucking
yum,
Pez
yum,
candy.
Yum, 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 yum.
So for example, Operation Paperclip was a US program that brought over 1600 German scientists, engineers, and technicians from Nazi Germany to the US to give them employment to fight communism.
Hey, that's way more scientists than I thought.
Yeah, and a lot of them have some sketchy involvement with the Nazi party that had to be scrubbed nice and clean.
I knew about Operation Paperclip. I knew that the United States had folded in Nazi scientists into their ranks. I didn't think it was 1,600 of them.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a couple dozen.
I mean, the most famous one is Wernher von Braun, who then became the head of NASA and like led the rocketry program because he was the developer of like the V2 rockets and stuff like that in Germany. But yeah, they were brought into all sorts of stuff. This was an operation by the Joint Intelligence Operations Agency carried out by the U.S. Army's Counterintelligence Corps. And the U.S. has a lot of its scientific breakthroughs post World War II to thank for, or a lot of Nazi scientists that they then let escape justice in order to develop new science for America to fight communism. I also would be remiss if I didn't talk about another side of this that doesn't get a lot of attention, which was Operation, I don't know Russian either, Operation Osovakim. So this was the Soviet version of Operation Paperclip, which was distinctly different for some interesting ways because, the Council of...
Number one, they were in a different country.
Yeah.
Big difference.
They're doing it communistly.
Mm-hmm.
But this was decreed through the Council of Ministers of the Soviet Union. It was larger in scale and basically was less, let's just say that like one did it with America attracted their Nazis with honey. The Russians specifically used vinegar. Their whole thing was because Germany had this whole concept after World War II that like Germany needs to repay all of like the sort of infrastructure damage that was done to the Soviet Union during the war and did so by like literally tearing down factories brick by brick and putting them on trains and taking them to the Soviet Union to be built as new factories to rebuild their industrial capacity. But that also extended to scientists, engineers, and technicians who were dismantled brick by brick and put on trains and sent. But like they were literally like kidnapping German scientists and like forcing them to develop science for the Soviet Union. They're like, they had like trophy brigades and stuff like that who were like, their job was to go to like these like, you know, run down atomic facilities and just take as many materials and like research, but also scientists that they could and bring it back to the Soviet Union for their own scientific things. Was notably less successful because it turns out kidnapping people and taking them to the Soviet Union and forcing them to do science for you, less successful than, hey, want to come to America where you'll be well paid and we'll expunge your entire war criminal record to do things?
We're a little nicer over here.
Nicer to the Nazis, yeah.
I've always said that about America.
Both of which, though, do rise to some very problematic and ethical questions. Like Wernher von Braun, I think we talked about this last week. Wernher von Braun, head of NASA, key to the development of the Saturn V rocket that basically got America to the moon and also is the first ICBM. Like you put a nuclear warhead on a Saturn V and that is America's nuclear like missile capacity.
Yeah.
But Wernher von Braun developed the V2 rocket program, the first rockets developed in Nazi Germany. And as we mentioned, definitely, although he claims otherwise, definitely knew that his rockets were being built with slave labor by people in concentration camps because his brother personally oversaw these things. And a lot of these other Nazi scientists who were brought to America under Paperclip also had very troublesome, like they were the ones who were not famous enough to have to go to Nuremberg, but a lot of them had very heinous histories, especially those that had to do with like medicine and biology and the kind of things that they were doing under their research expunged to come over and do their work. And we have to talk about like how space exploration and the development of like advanced materials, fuel efficiency, engines, like a lot of our space age science has to do with the fact that this happened while, you know, literally under the actions of letting some of the worst criminals in all of human history escape justice. And we kind of have to live with that fact today.
Yeah.
And especially because it was done under the idea of undoing communism, the big evil.
But what if we spin it to be cooler and we say that it was alien technology?
Yeah.
And maybe that's how we live with it.
That's how we live with it. It could be that like the whole alien thing here is us trying to subconsciously relieve ourselves of our collective guilt because we're not talking about embracing and accepting the ideas of war criminals. We're talking about alien technology just filtered through them that they just happened to get.
That's that's a way to look at it.
Yeah. I also find that this way of talking about this is, by the way, we are now in the part where Tristan makes you sad, which is like kind of the whole episode, but
it feels like, I don't want to do the sound effect we did last week because it feels very, it feels very silly. I'll come up with another one.
But trying to like give this kind of attribution to the Nazis and like all of this sort of like mystique and power seems to dilute the story of what the Nazis actually were, which were the people, the group and the movement that created the worst atrocities in human history, including the systematic genocide of 6 million Jews, as well as numerous other war crimes. And also like they just like the mass eradication again of not only like the a huge amount of the Jewish people who lived in Eastern Europe, but also Romani people. People who are like Jehovah's Witnesses, homosexuals, like the first people that the Nazis came for were transgender people, but also anybody who had left-wing politics. They also went after, like...
But I thought the Nazis were a socialist party, Tristan.
Yeah, it's weird that the socialists that they say were so... were like literally branded as being the bulwark of Western society against communism. We don't talk about that part, Mr. Shapiro. And also just like this kind of shit sucks. And in many ways, this like dilution of Nazi ideas through to esoteric circles is a way to sanitize this movement that did some of the worst stuff. And like a lot of this, like a lot of these claims, like these like sort of pseudo scientific claims about what or pseudo historical claims about what the Nazis were up to, also has links to other conspiracy theories like Holocaust denial, which is the ongoing conspiracy theory that the Holocaust didn't happen and that this was used by them to build a narrative to sort of gain power, or revisionists who try to argue down how the sheer scope, because the unbelievable scope of the Holocaust, and these kinds of things are like part of this movement that we don't get as much attention to.
Yeah.
And the suppression of this also like develops conspiracy theories that are also like based around this idea that there's this like Jewish power that rules the world. The Illuminati is basically that. They won't say it's Jewish people, but the claim of who they believe is part of the Illuminati is conspicuously high in Jews.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it sort of like downplays the important stuff and also tries to sanitize the horrifying ideas that these people were associated with. And so it's important that we fight that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we try to do a little bit here. It sucks to talk about Nazi shit so often.
Yeah. This next few episodes are going to be rough,
I predict that these will be some of our more popular episodes.
Unfortunately, the History Channel probably bears that out to be true, because before they were the aliens people, they were the Nazi people because their World War II documentaries were so popular.
Yeah.
But I also think that this is in some ways important because we're like, what we are doing really is getting right to the heart of the ancient astronaut conspiracy theory. This is like the thing that this comes from. This is where like all of the new age, like occultism, like all of that sort of like modern day new age UFO culture comes out of this specific like horror of the 1940s, and is a like in many ways kind of like with like how the New World Order was to rebrand what they called the Zionist occupational government before that. It's a way to add a level of deniability by like sanding the Nazi stuff off of Nazi ideas. And kind of disturbing to a lot of people, if you just say Nazi shit but don't attribute it to Nazis, you get a rather warm reception for a lot of the ideas, which is terrifying.
And I feel like if you listen to this podcast, there's been a lot of this stuff, like it's, you know, I was just thinking about the Betty and Barney Hill and just like how people have like PTSD from World War II and are trying to like work through that. And you know, our minds come up with all sorts of ways to cope with things like that, including, you know, alien abductions and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's everything sort of traces back to here in a lot of ways. So I think it's important that we're doing these episodes, and hopefully we're making them fun to listen to.
Yeah, I'm guessing that there's like a bigger story that we could talk about that some historian will need to write about how this whole like belief in UFOs and government conspiracies comes out of our society being unable to process World War II and like our civilized, like the sort of like World War II so profoundly changed the way the world functions and the way governments work and the way that like the dynamics of reality are for many people, that conspiracy theories and like UFOs and stuff like that will be like the way that we like culturally processed that shocked the system in many ways, like how like the 9/11 truth movement is us doing that for 9/11 in a much smaller capacity. But that was like the subject of my PhD dissertation that I never finished.
Well, Tristan, maybe you are that historian, but we'll never know until you write a book about this, or just keep doing this stuff on this podcast. That's also fun. Hey, thanks so much for listening to this episode. Believe it or not, I think we have more Nazi stuff to talk about next week.
Yeah, I have here. I will get it. I'll give you an exact number so that you know how much more Nazi shit I have. Like, we're good. Nazis will show up over and over again because, you know, you dig into conspiracy
just the nature.
Theories, but we still got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, eight, nine episodes worth of stuff. I'm gonna have to mix it up. I got a really stupid racist conspiracy theory about the Phoenicians in Australia that would involve getting Dale Kingsmill back. Maybe we should just do that at some point in the near term future.
We'll break it up in between.
We're gonna need some chasers for all these shots. We can't do this many shots in a row. I learned that in undergrad.
This is a lot of stuff. Well, hey, thank you so much for listening. A great place where you can keep up with this show is Probs Not Aliens. If you are true space potatoes, follow Probs Not Aliens on Twitter and Blue Sky.
And we're back. I lost the password to the Blue Sky account for multiple months because I forgot what password what email I put on the account, but it's fixed now.
It's fixed now because I got an email that someone logged into it the other day.
Yeah.
So I assume that was you. And Tristan, where can people find more of your stuff online? You've mentioned making videos about things. What is that? What do you mean by that?
Man, if that's a thing, if after seeing this, you're like, man, more of that, I applaud you for your tenacity.
Resolve.
Constitution. I would say that you would go to Step Back on YouTube/Nebula. My latest video is on Gaza and is being quickly followed up by people who are weaponizing what's happening in Gaza to spread anti-Semitism. So,
great.
Yay. If I wanted to learn instead the role Abraham Lincoln has played in comics, where would I go?
Oh my God. That's such an old video. Sometimes you change it up on me. Sometimes you're like, here's a medium-aged video from Scott, and now you're going back to way back in time.
I gotta keep guessing.
Yeah. This is my YouTube channel called NerdSync, NERDSYNC. If you like comic books, if you like cartoons, if you like video essays about media, come hang out with me while I make stuff. I've been promoting this one video for so long. I promise I'm working on it.
Cookbook video?
About the weird world of licensed cookbooks. I promise I'm still working on it.
Nice.
So get excited for that.
Hype.
It is fun and sad. So good. Look forward to it. I get to do a part in my videos where Scott makes you sad.
Oh,
if you like the part where Tristan makes you sad in this podcast, come to my video.
When Scott makes you sad, it gets very personal. Like when your Captain Marvel video just turned into an entire thing about imposter syndrome.
Yeah. Skrulls, man. Anyway, you can also support this podcast, get episodes early over on nebula.tv/probablynotaliens. I know we talk about you get episodes early, but it's also a way to support the show.
Yeah.
It helps us out financially. We don't really make any money from this podcast except through the people who sign up on nebula.tv/probablynotaliens. So thank you to everyone who has done that. You can write reviews of this podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can leave feedback on Spotify, comments on YouTube. All of these things are really great ways, free ways,
to help support the podcast as well, because it shows that there's a thriving community of people who like the show and are still leaving reviews. And it's great. We really appreciate it. If you are writing a review for this episode, mention something about Avatar The Last Airbender.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this for every episode now. If someone's going to leave a review at the end of listening to an episode, we have to give them a prompt. So if you're leaving a review for the first time after listening to this, mention Avatar The Last Airbender. You can also tell your friends about the show. It really helps us out. That's another great way to support the show. And a great place to send your friends is probsnotaliens.com. It's a very simple website. It's got links to everything, everywhere you can listen to us. And we really appreciate all of you wonderful space potatoes. But until next time, my name is Scott Nicewan.
I'm Tristan Johnson, and the truth is out there. Yip, yip.
Yep, yep, that's it.
I did it.
That's Avatar.
Our son calls our cat named Romeo Momo. And
aww.
I can't wait to see if when we get to the age of Avatar, that Momo will be a welcome part of it.
Momo will be canceled because he's sexist.
Oh, you don't even want to know what Momo did after Avatar.
That was not a character arc. Momo was just bad.